witnesses to come to the table right away. We have a couple people from DNR and one person who represents the county of Dakota. And yep. Senate File 7011 is part of the plan for some acreage that's in Empire Township, mostly in Dakota County. The university owns a little over 7,200 acres down there, and some of it has already been put into a WMA, which was on the Vermilion River, with one parcel, a couple parcels that were put together. And this bill speaks to a third parcel, which is now in the ownership of the University of Minnesota. And it's being titled, I guess, Vermilion Highlands Wildlife Management Area. And Mr. Bogus and Mr. Remaker are both from DNR and would like to speak to it. And I would like to, they have a fact sheet that I believe you already have on this. And another thing that if you still have it in your packets, the packet that had a nice cover, Creating Common Ground. And there's a map in there on page 18 or 19 that shows the entire parcel in several colors. If you don't have the fact sheet, we do have some more here, and they could be passed out. But Mr. Chairman and members, Senate File 7011 is actually kind of the third section of a property that's being groomed to be not only a WMA, which part of it is already, but the new section of land that is not quite completely negotiated for a purchase and is very close to purchase at this point. Some of it will go into the WMA, and the other parts of it will go into a piece of it will be park. And there is already a shooting range and a horse trail on some of the property, and they will adjoin each other. And so you'll see that the only thing I have a question on we'll just go through the bill with DNR. This is really a department bill, so I'll leave that to DNR.
Mr. Chair and members, Ed Bogus, Deputy Director of Fish and Wildlife for DNR, and I'll just make a few introductory comments. I have with me Mr. Tim Bremerker, who's our regional wildlife manager for the central region, and who was involved with the discussions. But as part of the Gopher Stadium bill last session, there was a requirement that the commissioner, in cooperation with the Board of Regents of the University and Dakota County, should submit a report to the legislature by January 15th of 2007, and that's the larger document we have some extra copies up here, but that's the larger document that folks, I think, should have seen before Creating Common Ground. And part of that included an assessment of the need for recreational activities continuing on this property. And there were a number of provisions in the legislation last session that were kind of beyond what a typical wildlife management area. There was an intent to designate a large portion of this property as wildlife management area, but to allow for some other uses, including research by the university, education, outreach, and agriculture, hunting, fishing, trapping, and other compatible recreation, some designated trails. There's already horse and snowmobile trails. Shooting sports facilities. There's a gun club currently on the property, and then leases for small scale farm to market vegetable farming. And because those are those are not traditional uses of wildlife management and public hunting areas, and because we needed a process to take the next step of getting this land designated as wildlife management area, is the reason that Senate File 7011 is before the committee today. What this bill would basically do is designate this property as the Vermilion Highlands Wildlife Management Area. It would make it a unit of the outdoor recreation system, but it would provide for broader uses than a traditional wildlife management area, some expanded uses. And that's what's detailed at the bottom of page 1 and the top of page 2 of the bill. It's those types of uses that I just talked about. And it provides some authority to do some management, to restrict some of those uses during hunting seasons and things like that. while assuring that the university is able to conduct its continuing research on the property. The final section of the bill makes it clear that the state would not pay in lieu of tax on these lands. The way the bill last year was structured, there's a 25-year time before the transfer of this land actually occurs, but there's not payment in lieu of taxes on that land right now, and so this is just a clarification that after that 25 years, there would still not be a payment of in lieu of tax. So, Mr. Chairman, that and members, that describes briefly what the bill does. There was a lot of process that went into the creation of the report, and a lot of back and forth with the university and with Dakota County. And I would at this point see if Mr. Bremerker has anything to add. I also know the county is here.
Part of it's going to be a WMA, part of it's going to be a park. Is that correct?
In the future, yes, Mr. Chairman. Actually, part of it is already there. Another section is already a WMA, but this is adjacent to it. This land will fill in some of the spaces nearby. Be multiple use.
I'm just trying to straighten everything out in my head about the the non-WMA uses that you want in the park section, right?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Mr. Bremerker to, he's much more familiar with the details, but just to introduce the additional comment is that we're talking about some of those non-traditional uses on the part that is the WMA. There's also another property involved here, and I think that's the reason for some of the confusion, but I'll let Mr. Bremerker explain that.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Tim Bremerker. I'm the Regional Wildlife Manager for the Central Region. On page 18 of the handout, I think the map will help explain the concept in more detail. You will note a crossed hatched line around a parcel called the Umore South, and that is the 2,800 acres that is mentioned in the Vermilion Highlands Wildlife Management Area bill, and it was the subject of the legislation that provided for the money to the university for the stadium and also for this joint cooperative management activity program by the University of Minnesota, DNR, and also the Dakota County. The Umore South, again, is 2,800 acres, and it was provided in the legislation and also as part of our process for developing a plan or a proposal for uses of this property. There would be, clearly, we would obviously provide for hunting and trapping opportunities on this parcel, but there were in addition other recreational needs that needed to be addressed on this parcel because there were some pre-existing uses and some uses that folks wanted to maintain. So the objective was to try to figure out how we could develop a state wildlife management area and also then provide for some of the pre-existing uses that that were present, such as horseback riding, grant and aid trails, and nature study. But there's also a key element is, of course, the activities of the University of Minnesota that must continue forever, research in particular. So we developed a process. We met over many months and came up with a proposal, generally, which is really included in this legislation, that would allow us, provide us the opportunity to establish a wildlife management area, then superimposed over the entire 2,800 acres, and then with this legislation allow for uses that are not typical to state wildlife areas.
Mr. Chairman? Why not just further divide this parcel and keep one part of it for your existing uses and then the rest of it as a normal WMA.
Mr. Chairman, I think that possibly Mr. Tilley would like to speak to that piece, because the parcel that we're talking about now, if you're looking at your map, the orange chimney shape, you know, broad base with a narrow chimney regional park, is the Butler property. Negotiation. Were you picking up my voice before or not?
It was going in and out.
Okay, I'm sorry. The orange-shaped with the broad, it says Regional Park, which is broad at the base and then has a narrow chimney, is the Butler property, which is not yet completely purchased, but the negotiations are getting close to finality. And so there's some family interest in the uses of that land, looking to move the land for some time, but they want to make sure of its uses. And Mr. Tilley, representing the county, probably can speak to that more closely.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Barry Tilley, and I'm here today representing the Dakota County Board of Commissioners. As what Senator Parasol is saying, the land that's surrounded with the dotted orange line is what is referred to as a Butler Trust property. There was a separate bonding initiative last year that approved $6 million for the purchase of that piece of property. The negotiations for the purchase of that property, which is separate from the Umore property, is underway right now. It's in the process of trying to determine the value of it for the purposes of acquiring that. When that property is acquired, Mr. Chairman, it will be a portion, as marked there, the northern portion of that Butler Family Trust property will be a regional park. The southern portion will be added as a wildlife management area. Currently, the bill that is before you deals only with the Umore South properties, and those are the properties that were coming into public further public use because of the trade with the Gopher Park. Dakota County has been operating as a full partner and is quite pleased with the tenor and the tone of the negotiations in a joint management arrangement that's going forward between the University of Minnesota, the DNR, and Dakota County. The county will play a part of the role in some of the management for recreation purposes of the Umore Park area. And I don't know if that answers your question, Mr. Chairman.
Where's the shooting range on this map?
Mr. Chairman, if you look on that map again, there is a kind of a elliptical orange circle up against kind of that thing that's marked Regional Park. On the north end of that elliptical orange space would be generally the location of the existing shooting range. To the left and slightly to the south of the length of the words Umore South.
Huh? Mm-hmm. To the left?
To the left and below.
Oh, okay. Down here.
Just kind of underneath that green arrow?
Yes.
Okay. All right. The whole elliptical orange blob is not a shooting range, just part of it?
Mr. Chairman, correct. It only parts.
Okay.
The northern portion.
All right.
Mr. Chairman and member, it's the map isn't detailed to the extent. If you look at the words, look at Umore North, the Umore North there with that heavy dotted line, heavy black dotted line, that line that runs back and forth from side to side on the map, I believe is County 46. And the portion that that Mr. Bremaker was trying to point you to, the pear-shaped orange piece, that's approximately 170th Street. And 46 is 160th Street, so it's a section there. And that's the 170th is approximately where the shooting range appears in that section.
Isn't there a way we could figure this out without having to put these kind of start defining non-traditional uses as within a WMA? Some other thing we could do here that so we don't start opening up that door?
Mr. Chairman, this is property that has been out of use since the World War II. The 7,200 acres that the university has now came into their possession when the munitions plant was decommissioned. And not then, but I mean, it has been out of use for that long. And so it's really been used by farmers who lease some of the property and small vegetable farmers, typically cultural groups that that have those small parcels for farm-to-market vegetables. But frankly, I think that this is the perfect park for this land because the university is not looking to sell it. A couple times they were looking to sell it and they backed off.
No, I like that.
And so some of this exchange land can be put to a good use with many, many uses because we have no regional parks in that general area.
No, I don't disagree with any of the proposed uses. I'm just wondering about the legal designation that you've got as having a shooting range in a wildlife management area. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with any of the proposed uses. I'm just wondering how could we, without having to start opening up this legal definition of what's allowed in what non-traditional items are allowed in a WMA, can we wordsmith it some way else? Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, there are some of the same questions being raised in my mind because normally in a WMA we do not allow other activities, but I think the exception here is the unique way that the state is acquiring this land or is coming into possession of this land. And I, too, was wondering if there's some way it could be designated so our citizens would know that it is a little bit of will be a little bit of an unusual WMA. And I see a couple places it's referred to as a modified WMA. And I'm questioning in my mind if we could include modified in that WMA and then maybe include in the definitions modified wildlife management area means the wildlife management at Umore Park and may allow other uses and allows other uses besides traditional WMA. I don't have answers to those questions. Right. They're just sort of things going through my mind.
Mr. Chairman and members, I would just like to remind you that this has been finally worked out because, first of all, the oldest pre-existing element on this property is the gun club itself. It is done totally by volunteers. Everything on it is, and they lease the land from the university and have for many years. They've built their range to an excellent condition, and they continue to work on it as volunteers. It's all done by the sweat of their brow and the aching in their back over years and years, and there are not many shooting ranges out there for people to use. In fact, the Rosemount, which site of the Army, which is very close by, shut down its indoor facility. So it used to be used for law enforcement and other purposes, and it's no longer available to people. And so this, I really feel that preserving that shooting range is very necessary in this area.
I think it should be, too. I think it's got to be. I agree with preserving it.
Mr. Chairman?
But how do we do that without having it part of the WMA legal definition?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this bill just puts that in place, but at the same time, DNR has signage has been considered as well and discussed so that everything will be signed according to the activities available in the areas. So you'll find that there might be back-to-back signs where the borders are of some of these uses.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I'm not sure who might answer this, but is the intent to continue the uses that have been traditional on the property, and there's more than just the gun club, there's other uses, at the same level of intensity, or do you envision any change, any broader use of some of those in other parts of this area now seeking this designation?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the legislation in particular was clear in regards to that research by the University of Minnesota could not be impaired by the other activities. That was a primary use of the property and would continue forever. As a result, we set up a process to ensure that as we add other activities or other recreational uses of the property, that we would not diminish or detract from the primary purposes of the property. And that would occur through a very careful planning process, but also a review process of any changes that would have to be approved by members of the University of Minnesota, Dakota County, and DNR. So that activity in particular. Other activities that we would like to continue would obviously be the horseback trail along the Lone Rock, Grenade snowmobiling, the gun club, and of course, and then the idea, of course, is to expand the uses of all of the property for hunting and trapping to the extent possible.
So, Mr. Chairman, following up, my mind was going a little bit different direction than Senator Chaudhry and Senator Fredrickson on this, is it seems to me there's a unique opportunity here within wildlife management areas because of the research component. And I don't know whether the university has, you know, with the nature of the research that they're doing, but if you had any baseline data, it would seem to me it would be an opportunity to test the impact of some of these uses on wildlife management. If wildlife management is the function of the wildlife management areas, it seems to me there is room for some interesting research on the compatibility of a variety of uses in a given area in terms of the impact that they have on wildlife. Maybe that's a distinction that could be made. It's the most unique one, too, that this is there's more research probably going on here than there is in the traditional wildlife management area, I presume, or maybe I'm wrong.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, we've discussed that on numerous occasions, the unique opportunities that are available on this property because it puts the University of Minnesota and the department in a working cooperative endeavor on almost a daily basis on a unique piece of property just south of Twin Cities. And in addition for research on vegetation, habitat restorations, there's also lots of potential for recreation research. And so it's been, folks are kind of excited about the opportunities that lie ahead, particularly in regards to some of the research work.
So Mr. Chairman, it would seem to me that the exceptions here would not necessarily open the floodgates for other wildlife management areas. It seems to me that there's some uniqueness here that would allow some activities, some research, and things that could benefit our understanding of wildlife management wherever it's conducted.
Mr. Chairman and members, Senator Olson, thank you for asking the question. I would like to draw attention to members on page 1, line 11. The entire parcel will be about 2,840 acres, so that is quite sizable, considering the numbers of uses that are out there. And a whole lot of large bean and corn farmers were leasing property from the university as well, so it wasn't just tiny little farms. It was good-sized ones anyway. Mr.
Chairman,
Tilley has anything to add.
It's about 4.5 sections of land.
When all is said and done.
24, 28.
Yeah, you can see the sections.
4 2/3 sections.
1, 2, 3, 4.5, yeah.
Chairman, members of the committee, I think this truly is really unique. I don't think there's another county in the state that participates with the DNR on recreational uses of wildlife management area. The county is quite thankful that the DNR is cooperating and to a great extent. And the University of Minnesota has been great in this. This is really a unique opportunity for a partnership that probably does not exist. We have the opportunity with this bill. It allows in just this wildlife management area to do some of these non-traditional things in a wildlife management area. Clearly, we will not do that to the detriment of the primary use, which is wildlife management. We are going to manage this in a way that we can get the most use with the least adverse impact on the wildlife management area.
So Mr. Chairman, it would seem you're seeking the wildlife management area designation as over against another, because that, in fact, has the greatest potential. I'm just speculating, has the greatest potential for protecting the ability to conduct research and do things that will not jeopardize, but, you know, with other activities. If you were having an open parkland or other kinds of uses, it would make it more difficult to do some of the things that the university would like to continue to do on this land. Is that a legitimate statement, or?
Yes, and I don't want to make any comment, but actually, it's such an unusual opportunity that I can't believe that we're going to have a chance to do this. It's just great to see it happen. And, well, I'll leave it to the DNR. Any other comments they might have about the negotiations?
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, members, since I raised the question I raised a little while ago, Mr. Knopf of Senate Research has been looking at the statute, and this actually will be going into our statute books with other wildlife management areas that were established in a similar unique way, in that they were established by law rather than commissioner orders. And I think this, just the way it is, fits nicely into that part of our law.
Mr. Knopf, how many other WMAs are in this section?
Mr. Chairman, you can see subdivision 66 or 65.
Okay.
This would be the 66. It was Senator Stumpf will remember those well. These were in 2000 and 2002, the designation of the Concon lands as WMAs, and they did include some trails and some roads that were to be used by ATVs throughout those, and some other special considerations for those areas. Otherwise, the remainder of the WMAs are, after they're acquired, the commissioner can designate those after they're acquired. Since these were unique, they had to be done by statute. Again, this is also unique and needs to be done by statute, too.
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Knopf, did we allow horseback riding in those earlier designations? And maybe there should be an amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
See?
What a great opportunity.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, I don't remember horseback riding being a part of that.
The Western Concon thing, they sling their Mr. Chairman, I don't know if we've run out of questions or answers, but I would like to move Senate File 711 be passed.
We're going to lay this over for inclusion in the omnibus bill, Senator Parasol. This is what we've been doing with all the policy bills that do not have money.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there's another bill out there with money in it for this particular use.
Okay.
But it's not before us today.
Okay.
But, Mr. Chairman, just on that point, this is a very significant issue, not that others aren't too, but maybe this bill should be a dual-tracked, let it go to the floor as a freestanding and also included in your omnibus bill.
The process for the policy bills in this is that they'll be laid over for inclusion in the omnibus policy bill, unless they need to be heard in another committee or they've got money in it that need to go on to Senator Anderson's bill. They're going to be laid over for consideration.
Mr. Chairman, just a point of information. Is that the practice that the House is using, too, in terms of policy for environment?
I'm not aware. Not aware either way.
So, Mr. Chairman, if they aren't, what does that mean? I mean, if they aren't making an omnibus policy bill, then what does that mean for what we're doing here in the Senate on these?
We'll probably should have that discussion with the House then.
I'd encourage that. Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I think, Mr. Chairman, I think there would be a cost on this bill. And so it probably would be appropriate to have it as part of the finance, or the go to the finance division. I would think the signage and stuff would have an impact on at least some cost. Unless all those trails would be already signed, I'm not sure.
What about the boundaries? You think the boundaries would have to be signed? What about the boundaries?
Mr. Boggess.
Mr. Chairman, and to Senator Stumpf, there are some signage costs that would be associated with this. In the governor's budget bill, we have proposed some internal reallocation of funds to cover the costs of management of this area and some other management needs in South Metro.
And this should be in the budget bill.
So there are some costs, but they're in the governor's budget bill.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Anderson.
We haven't passed a budget yet, so I think we're going to have to review it in the budget committee if there is something that's being tracked in the budget.
Well, there's Senator Parasol said there's a separate budget bill for this. There's a separate bill for this that has money in it that deals with this issue.
That's the reallocation that was just mentioned, Mr. Chair.
I'm not sure exactly what it does. Senator Parasol alluded to the bill here that deals with. This bill doesn't have impact on what the Senate's budget will be. So this has got to be in the omnibus bill, the policy bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, as long as I get the budget, what is the budget? Yeah. Maybe I could clarify with Senator Parasol. So what does the budget bill do that you're talking about? Is that your bill as well?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I wasn't talking about, I mentioned another bill that I have. It's just it's a one-paragraph bill. It's about so long. But I'm not sure of the origin of that. It's not the same as the governor's budget that Mr. Bogus was referring to. They said they have money in governor's budget for the purposes of the signage and other management needs. So mine is in a different file, but it's not part of the governor's budget as far as I know. I'm not sure where it got sent to me. It might have been sent by Representative McNamara, who's carrying this bill in the House.
Is there any further discussion on Senate File 711? Seeing none, this will be laid over for inclusion in the omnibus policy bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Bach, you've got some folks from very far away. Why don't we take them?
I have no clue. This is South Bear's deal.
Senate File 1131.
Mr. Chairman, there's an A2 amendment to get to the bill kind of in shape.
That need to be distributed?
Which bill is it?
Mr. Chair, I'm talking to my counterpart in the House. Doesn't mean more.
Okay, it's being distributed.
We're going to have another bill. And you can make it work.
This is an author's amendment. It's the first time the bill has been heard, so we'll go ahead and Senator Scoten, you want to make the motion, A2?
Move the A2 amendment to Senate File 1131.
Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Scoten and committee. Members, I've got a number of constituents along the north shore of Lake Superior that have commercial netting, something that's a long tradition on the north shore of Lake Superior. Back in the 60s, and one of my witnesses can testify to exactly when, largely because of the lamprey problem in Lake Superior, commercial fishing of lake trout was suspended. Most recently, the DNR has had a lake trout harvest program called assessment netting going on, where they have some commercial fishermen that do netting for assessment purposes for the DNR. What this bill would do is expand that assessment netting to a slightly larger area and increase the number of fish that the commercial fishermen under this license are able to take, Mr. Chairman. And that's really about the extent of it. And I have two witnesses from the North Shore that would like to testify on the bill.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Who would like to go first?
Will.
Please introduce yourself.
George Wilkes, Grand Marais. I run the Trout Cafe. We love to serve Lake Superior fish at our restaurant. With me today is Stephen Dahl,
Could you turn the mic so that you're... Thank you.
Stephen is a real live commercial fisherman. He's in Duluth Township.
Yeah, I'm president of the North Shore Commercial Fishermen's Association. So.
And also with us today is Harley Tofty, another commercial fisherman from Grand Marais.
Where is he? Just raise your hand. Okay, hi. Thank you.
We're here representing the North Shore Commercial Fishermen's Association, all 22 of us on the North Shore from Duluth to Grand Portage. But in large part, we also represent the communities of the North Shore. We have letters of support from every unit of local government in Zones 2 and 3. Oh, I'm sorry. I did want to pass out a map. Can I do that, please?
We'll have someone pass that out for you.
This is a map. It shows the zones in the Minnesota waters of Lake Superior. There are three of them, and I'll be referring to these zones as we speak. There's also a graph of lake trout population. Thank you. We have letters of support from the Cook County Board, the Lake County Board, the cities of Grand Marais, Silver Bay, Beaver Bay, the towns of Lutzen, Tofty, and Schroeder. We also have over 500 letters of support from consumers. The DNR has put forward legislation that would change to a great extent the current legislative direction regarding commercial fishing of lake trout in Lake Superior. That is 97C, statute 97C.835, titled Lake Superior Commercial Fishing. They have said that the legislature has directed them to close commercial fishing of game fish, and they believe that that was done in the 1990s when the legislature did in fact close some walleye fisheries to commercial harvest. Our position is that at the time the legislature did not apply that policy to Lake Superior, and that if you had meant to apply that to Lake Superior, you probably would have changed the Lake Superior commercial fishing statute, because it wasn't hidden anywhere. It's its own statute, and it has its own title. Now, we believe there's a reason that you didn't change that statute in the mid-90s, and that is because commercial fishing makes very good sense for the North Shore and for Lake Superior. It's a very good fit, biologically, environmentally, socially, economically. I'd like to begin by characterizing the existing North Shore commercial fishery. It's been around for 150 years. Commercial fishing is the industry that actually founded some of the communities along the North Shore, but it's still a vital part of North Shore life today. It's just a wonderful little cottage industry that exists on the North Shore of Lake Superior. As I said, there are about 22 commercial fishermen. They fish out of small open boats. They're individual owner operators. Their boats are between 16 and 27 feet long. They currently catch lake herring, and they do assessment netting of lake trout for the Department of Natural Resources. They've done that since 1962. And what these fishermen are doing is they're providing fresh fish, local fish, to the communities of the North Shore for our markets and our restaurants, for locals, and for our tourism industry. And it's just a wonderful way to get a really high-quality product to the people of the North Shore and the people who visit there. Commercial fishing has a few benefits to the North Shore communities. It provides access to the Lake Superior fishery for people who do not fish, both locals and tourists. It benefits the economy as an industry in itself, but also as a support for an authentic tourism industry. 80% of our economy is based on tourism on the North Shore. And having, again, this authentic industry of commercial fishing is really a wonderful support for that tourism industry. I run a restaurant, and I'm very well aware that the people that come up the North Shore really enjoy being able to have the Lake Superior fish available to them. There's also a lot of growing demand for locally produced food, sustainably produced food, and Lake Superior fish is produced very sustainably. There's no bycatch. There's no environmental harm. And so it's an important source of local food, again, for residents and visitors. And then, as I mentioned before, it is at the heart of the cultural heritage of the North Shore, both as looking back as our tradition, but also currently it's very important, and we feel that it can be even more so in the future. Now let's talk about lake trout in particular. I'll go over a little history. As Tom, or Senator Bach mentioned, lake trout fishery used to be a big deal in the North Shore. In 1940, there were over 400 licensed fishermen between Duluth and Grand Portage. In the late 1950s, the sea lamprey hit Lake Superior, decimated the lake trout populations. The lamprey came through the Great Lakes, and in each lake, as they came through, the lake trout population crashed. In 1962, the DNR closed the commercial lake trout fishery, and at that time, there was a promise made to the commercial fishermen of the North Shore and to the North Shore communities that lake trout commercial fishing would be reopened when populations recovered. It's been a long time, but the lake trout have come back. As you can see from the graph I just handed out, in the late 70s, there were very few lake trout, and since then, the population has made a steady increase. And also, what that doesn't show on the graph, but that the percent of wild fish in the population has made remarkable recovery, too, to the point where now we have predominantly wild fish, over 90% in Zone 3. Lake trout support a robust lake-wide sport fishery, and they're also commercially fished in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Ontario. Minnesota is currently the only agency or jurisdiction that doesn't allow commercial lake trout fishing. Minnesota DNR fisheries biologists currently believe that a harvestable surplus of lake trout exists in zones 2 and 3. And we have an opportunity now to bring back, in a very limited way, a conservatively managed, sustainably managed commercial lake trout fishery. And because of the health of the lake trout population, we can do this. We can take a few fish commercially and still maintain a very high-quality sport fishery. So we're in a position where it's win-win. It's not either-or. I should also point out that right now the lake trout that's served in most North Shore restaurants is actually imported from Canada or Wisconsin. Okay, the latest chapter in our history lesson here is that in beginning of 2005, the DNR started a process to update their fisheries management plan for Lake Superior. The DNR created a Lake Superior Advisory Group, which was a citizens group, to help them with that process. It consisted of sport fishing organizations, commercial fishermen, environmental organizations, and tribal agencies. We met, both Steve and I were a member of that advisory group. We met once a month for 9 months to help fisheries managers draft a fisheries management plan. And we did so. And what came out of that was a very well-crafted proposal for commercial lake trout harvest. We were very proud of that. And it was a remarkable process. We were able to propose this commercial lake trout harvest with no opposition from any of the sport fishing groups. Advisory group. And I will read you the names of the sport fishing groups just to show you how extensive it was. Arrowhead Fly Fishers, Duluth Charter Fishing Guides, Kamloops Advocates, Lake Superior Steelhead Association, North Shore Charter Captains Association, Trout Unlimited, Two Harbors Catch and Donate, United Northern Sportsmen, and Western Lake Superior Trollers. So we made our case to the sport fishermen in our area, and none of them opposed the commercial lake trout harvest, and the reason they didn't is because they saw that it was right for the North Shore, biologically and socially. So the reason we're all here today is that this draft plan went to the Department of Natural Resources Commissioner's Office in St. Paul for final review, and the lake trout proposal, the commercial lake trout harvest proposal, was eliminated. Now, this was a shock to us, both the fishermen and the North Shore communities. We've been dealing with the DNR for 20 years asking for commercial lake trout harvest. And the response has always been, well, the fish are coming back, but the percentage of wild fish to stocked fish isn't quite where we want it. The fishery isn't quite recovered. And so now we've gotten to the point where the fisheries biologists are telling us, yes, the fishery is recovered. They're mostly wild fish. But the DNR leadership turns around and says, well, now we've got a policy or a philosophy of opposing the commercial harvest of game fish. And again, this was news to us. It was certainly news to the Lake Superior office that had worked for 15 months to produce this public planning process and produce this fisheries management plan that included lake trout harvest. I mean, that's evidence of the fact that this policy is new. It's a change of direction for the DNR. The amended bill 1131 that you have before you today is asking for or proposes the same level of commercial harvest of lake trout that appeared in that draft plan that was developed by the DNR and by the Lake Superior Advisory Group. It's essentially 3,000 fish for Minnesota Zone 3, 2,000 fish in Minnesota Zone 2 in 2010. There is no question of the biological sustainability of this proposal. By every measure, it's biologically sustainable. It's well within a very conservative total allowable catch, again, as determined by the DNR's own fishery biologists. Let me give you a couple of numbers to back that up. In Zone 3 currently, there's about 16,000 fish are harvested in total each year. Did I say Zone 1?
You said Zone 3.
Oh. Strike that. Strike that from the record. Zone 1, the zone down by Duluth, there's about 16,000 fish harvested every year. The lake trout population in Zone 3 is about the same as Zone 1. And even with our proposal, the total harvest would go up to 9,000 fish. So you can see there's quite a bit of wiggle room there. There's quite a bit of conservation already included in this proposal. Another figure to consider is that back in the 80s, there were quite a few more assessment fishermen. And the assessment harvest in the 1980s was about 3,500 fish per year commercially harvested by assessment. And that's the same amount of fish that we would propose to harvest now. So the level of harvest is actually precedented and was okay for the fishery.
Could you repeat that, Mr. Wilkes?
Yes. In the 1980s, there was an assessment fishery. That means they were gill netting lake trout for assessment purposes of 3,500 fish per year. And the harvest that we're proposing now is exactly the same, 3,500 fish per year. And what happened is the assessment fishery, fishermen retired since the 80s, and that's actually down to about 1,200 fish now.
So the current assessment?
Yes.
Fishing is 1,500.
Down to about 1,200 fish per year in Zone 3.
So it's at 1,200 now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And the reason that decreased is fishermen retired. There used to be about 12 assessment netters. Now there's only 4 assessment netters.
Okay. And Senator Bach, you're proposing to bring it up to 3,000.
An additional 3,000, Mr. Chairman.
The bill says total assessment taking and sale may not exceed 3,000 for Zone 3.
Mr. Chairman, it's expanded assessment taking on line 2.7. current assessment is 1,200.
The current assessment would be reduced to 600. The total would be 3,600.
So on line 9, you mean to say total expanded assessment taking in sale may not exceed 3,000. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
That is?
Yes, sir.
All right. I'm sorry. Mr. Wilk, go ahead. Continue.
Okay. Thank you. Also, it's important to understand that the DNR still has complete control to curtail this fishery in the event that they feel that the population, the fish population, is hurt in any way. So there's really no risk here.
On the invasive species, is lamprey totally gone now?
No, sir. Lamprey is still an issue. It was included and considered in all of our work with the lake trout proposals.
All right.
I just wanted to go on a little longer. The DNR has said that they have a philosophy against the commercial netting of game fish in Minnesota. And again, they cite the closing of the walleye fisheries in Lake of the Woods, Rainy Lake, etc. But lake trout has been a commercially fished species in Lake Superior by Minnesota law for over 150 years. Well, maybe not in law, but it has been a commercially fished species for a long time. It's also considered a commercially fished species in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Ontario, and by the Great Lakes Fisheries Commission, which is the overarching management agency that coordinates fisheries management between the states and the provinces. And there's a reason for that. Lake Superior is inherently suitable as a commercial fishery. It's big, it's deep, and it's cold, and the lake trout are actually very deep fish. So sport fishing is a relatively expensive and demanding endeavor on Lake Superior. That's why you can't just take the walleye boat and the kids and a few spin rods and go out into Lake Superior and catch lake trout. You need some specialized equipment, and you also need some expertise. That's why less than 0.1% of Minnesota anglers fish in Zone 3 every summer, and less than 0.1% of Minnesota anglers fish in Zone 2 every summer. And that's why the sport harvest in these zones is quite low, and that's why there's an underutilized fishery in this area. And in conclusion, that's why commercial fishing for lake trout makes sense on the North Shore. And that's it for me. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Dahl, did you have some comments? Or?
Well, maybe just to put a few things in perspective, I commercial fish out on Knife River. I start fishing at the end of March and go to Christmas. I can honestly say that more than half the time, I am the only boat out there in that whole area. And the other thing is that it's the situation is quite inequitable because virtually all the restaurants up and down the North Shore, even though there are 22 fishermen up and down the North Shore nearby, have to import lake trout from the Wisconsin commercial fishermen or the Canadian commercial fishermen. What we're asking for is it's bioregionalism at its best, local food for local markets.
Thank you. Senator Bach, did you have any other witnesses?
No, I don't, Mr. Chairman. Just let me, before the department comes up, just let me say, you know, on page 2, lines 10 and 11, I mean, we are giving the commissioner the authority to reduce the harvest if they need to protect the resource. And I support that provision, and I think that's the right thing to do. And if somehow this isn't sustainable someday, the commissioner does have the authority to reduce the take under the bill.
Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry asked about the sea lamprey, and I was listening to your comments on that and its decimation of the lake trout, but that they're coming back. But you also made an interesting statement that the native fish seems to be the dominant one versus the stocked fish, the lake trout. I'm curious as if you have any interpretation of that. Are the wild fish fighting back? to the sea lamprey, or are the stockfish becoming the diet of the sea lamprey?
Well, the purpose of the stocking was always to rehabilitate the wild population. And I don't know if the stockfish or the wild fish are more resistant to lamprey. It may be the wild fish have a better survival rate. But I think the reason the lake trout have been able to come back at all is because the lamprey are being controlled.
Okay.
They use a lampricide in the spawning areas, which are some of the rivers that flow into Lake Superior. And that's been going on for 30 years, I think.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
DNR wanted to come up.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. I'm going to briefly address the witnesses' comments regarding the Commissioner's Office decision on the commercial harvesting, and then any technical questions the committee may have, we'll ask those of Ron Pyer, our fisheries chief. The witness did discuss the plan that came down that did contain some limited commercial fisheries expansion. The Commissioner's Office, Commissioner Merriam at the time, Deputy Commissioner Holson, and Fish and Wildlife staff discussed this, and with their inherent history with the legislative process, they're very aware of the discussions that both the House and Senate made in the mid-'80s to buy out the commercial fishery operations on the Ontario border waters for walleye fishing and what those costs were to the state, millions of dollars to buy out those operations, and the direction that sent the commissioner or the department on regarding commercial harvesting of game fish. Also, at a time in the early 90s when we dealt with the Mille Lacs Treaty issue, commercial harvesting there, what the intent was of the legislature at that time, and the discussions we're currently having with bands right now about commercial harvesting of game fish. Though they aren't lake trout, they are game fish that are allocated for sportsmen and women of the state. With that in mind, we drafted the language that was before you before the amendment was put on that would prohibit lake trout from a commercial fishery operation. The amendment that Senator Bach has put on will expand the assessment netting, but will not establish a commercial season. Our main concern is the commercial establishment of a game fishery within the state of Minnesota, what that does in the future years if the population does succumb to threats, the VHS disease that's coming our way, that we don't know what the impacts are going to be on the Lake Superior fishery. Lamprey wounds are on the increase. We have some issues there. There's also tribal takings that can be increased. Some of the bands aren't harvesting what they could. And Senator Bach is correct, and we do appreciate the language in his amendment that will allow us the ability to control the harvest to a certain level if those instances do come to fruition. But our main concern is the establishment in statute of a commercial fishery. Our intent was coming with the language to remove that commercial fisheries language and then thereby allowing the legislature to again make a conscious decision on the commercial fishing of game fish or not. So those are my brief comments on that section, and we can turn it over to Ron Pyer for technical questions.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, why is Minnesota DNR attempting to limit the commercial fisheries in this when other states on Lake Superior are not?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, Mr. Pyer may have some more technical expertise, but from the Commissioner's Office perspective, the abilities for trophy harvesting of lake trout fishing are in some of those northern zones, that Zone 3 out by Isle Royale. If a commercial fishery for lake trout, trophy fishery, excuse me, were to be established, that would be the best location available to catch huge lake trout and to explore some unique areas of not only Minnesota but Michigan as well. It's that those decisions along with the historical decisions that have taken place in these bodies regarding commercial fishing, not of just lake trout, but of all game fish, that brought the Commissioner's Office to the decision that they had.
Technical answers? Are you just here to answer questions? Do you have something to mention?
Mr. Chairman, members, Ron Pyer with DNR Fisheries. Michigan doesn't allow any commercial harvest at this point in time. They have an assessment fishery. Wisconsin does have 10 commercial operators, each gets a little over 1,000 tags in conjunction with their whitefish netting. And Ontario has both a banned and a non-banned fishery, and they're attempting to purchase the rights of the non-banned fishery. So it's in Minnesota, it's clear that other jurisdictions do allow some level of lake trout harvest, and the decision was based on allocating a game fish resource to recreational anglers. And I just point out, the agency certainly is not opposed to commercial fishing. We've just expanded the potential lake herring harvest by a substantial amount, several hundred thousand pounds. So it is an issue, a determination of allocation of game fish that looking for guidance here.
Does Wisconsin have assessment harvest as well, in addition to their commercial harvest?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if they have an assessment harvest or not. Michigan has, they take about 300 fish. Actually, it's a Minnesota operator that collects around Isle Royale for them. I am not sure whether Wisconsin assesses. They do have an assessment program because all the lake states collect fish, particularly in the spring. I'm just not sure if it's commercial or if the agency does it.
What is Michigan's assessment harvest at in terms of numbers?
Mr. Chairman, it's in the 200 fish range.
Okay. Is there disagreement?
Mr. Chairman, the guys behind me tell me it's about 600.
Okay.
But I don't have any opinion on that.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple more questions. One of the first witnesses talked about how many game fishermen there are for lake trout in these areas. Do you have any idea of the numbers?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I think their numbers are fairly accurate. Based on trout and salmon stamp sales, there's about 50,000 anglers that fish Lake Superior. Most of those are down in the Duluth end. So you would expect that it's probably in that 5,000 to 10,000 angler range. We're not sure the exact number, but I would guess their assessment's probably fairly close.
And Mr. Chair,
just
give us. It sounds like the number of trout that we're talking about is in question. So, just give. I'd like the DNR's opinion on whether that's the numbers that are in here. You think are biologically supportable?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I think it's fair to say that the risk at this point in time is fairly minimal. We set the numbers in the draft plan based on a total mortality of 45% for lake trout. And at this point in time, we probably, we clearly have that amount of fish that's in the plan, and it's 1,800 additional fish, 1,800 additional lake trout in MN3. That was at least in the initial plan. It's not biologically risk-free, though. The Grand Portage Band has the capacity to take up to 6,000 more fish. We do have lamprey wounds. We're not sure of those. VHS is a viral disease that will likely enter Lake Superior within the next couple of years and can have some significant impacts on lake trout, plus the other invasive species. So at this point in time, the number that's being talked about has a minimal biological risk. It's not risk-free, and we're not sure what the future would hold over the next few years with the changes in Lake Superior.
What is on page one of the bill, you're eliminating pygmy whitefish. What is a pygmy whitefish? Why don't you want to fish that anymore?
Just a semantic question, Steve, on
pigments. Mr. Chair, members, the intent of the language is to deal with some semantic issues dealing with pygmy whitefish and lake whitefish in those two sections of law. We need to go back and clarify that specifically.
So pygmy and lake whitefish are the same?
Yeah, there is a pond net fishery in the St. Louis Bay that this could impact in terms of the gross over limits law. So we don't understand why the pygmy whitefish is there. It's not commercially harvested. There could be some incidental catches of them. And so if it's in the law like this, then all of a sudden these people could be affected by the gross over limits. So we'd like some clarification on that.
Okay. Other question I had is just commercial fishing practice. Can you, once you catch a fish in your net, can you throw any of them back?
Certainly, you know. What type of fish? I mean, the reality is
lake trout, for example.
Yes, you can throw them back, and we do get incidental catch of lake trout in the herring nets, and quite often they're alive and they go back. Okay. If they're dead, we can't tag them. But in the herring nets, you actually see very few other fish. These nets are sized. The mesh size is 2¾ inch. It catches 99.99% herring.
Does that leave room for discussion? It just kind of popped in my head whether there could be some sort of trophy fish slot so that we can address some of these DNR concerns.
If they go with the assessment netting, that is always done with a 4.5-inch mesh. That catches a much smaller fish. You're not going to get very seldom will you get a trophy fish in it.
I see.
So it does target the smaller fish, which is better for the market.
And that's insured in what Senator Bach is doing in this bill? That type of net will be used?
Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I don't think it's exactly in the bill, but it would. That's just a standard practice. The Great Lakes Fisheries Commission has asked for the assessment at a 4.5-inch mesh for many years now.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I think in terms of mesh size, we've worked very closely with the commercial operators. There's other portions of statute and rule that lay out mesh size, and I don't believe, at least from the agency's perspective, that would be a concern. We would work with them on that issue.
It's been in the planning process a year.
Mr. Chairman, what's troubling, and the reason that this bill is in front of us, is the DNR went into a process to develop a new 10-year plan for Lake Superior. Big stakeholder process, brought in all the groups, all the affected parties, spent 18 months meeting to develop a new plan for 10 years for Lake Superior. And everybody agreed, all the groups that you heard Mr. Wilkes mention, all of the commercial fishermen, the sport fishing people, all the stakeholders agreed. And then they put a stamp on it and sent it to St. Paul, and the part important to these guys was rejected. After doing exactly what we want the DNR to do, we want them to go through a stakeholder process, get input from everybody that's affected, and they did that, and everybody came to an agreement. And then when it came down here, it changed. So that's why we're in front of you today. And this harvest is sustainable. I've met with Mr. Parr about it, and to his credit, we had a meeting this fall up with the commercial fishermen, and he came up with some other people from the department and has indicated that this is a sustainable harvest. The department does have authority to reduce it in the bill if somehow they feel that it's not. And the reason the department knows what's going on with the fishery in Lake Superior is because of these commercial fishermen, because of the assessment netting that's going on there, is the reason that the DNR knows what the current population is and what the condition of the Lake Superior fishery relative to lake trout is. Mr. Chairman, I think what we do by passing this is we honor the process that we ask the DNR to go through. And I think it's reasonable to give it a try, and it's important to a whole lot of people on the North Shore to preserve the culture of commercial fishing that was a large part of the settlement of the North Shore of Lake Superior some 100-plus years ago. And you should be able to go to Mr. Wilkes' Angry Trout Cafe in Grand Marais. Mr. Chairman, I know you've probably been there. You shouldn't have to buy a fish from Wisconsin.
Mr.
Mr. Chairman?
Both Wisconsin lake trout come with little red scarves or
cheese hats.
Mr. Chairman? Cheese hats.
Cheese hats.
Senator Vickerman, then Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I've been listening and writing down a few notes, and one that sticks out in my mind is this one, listen very carefully. I always believe a promise made should be a promise kept. It's simple what this is doing. Just makes it simple. As long as you can shut it off. I fished up there, went out 30 miles. I'm never going to do that again because that's too far out in the water for me. I think the safeguards are all in here. I'm a little bit, disturbed. You can kill all the deer off up north, and then they're going to come back, so maybe you can catch quite a few of these trout, and they'll come back, too.
Senator Olson, Senator Stelman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's interesting to me is that you're continuing this as an assessment, not just eliminating that and having an open commercial fishing. You're continuing, and now can I assume that the assessment is for purposes of gathering information? And is that? Can you tell me a little more of what that means? I heard you talk about both the population as well as the any damage by lamprey, whatever else. This would just mean that there would be some more fish that would be taken for assessment purposes that will give more information to the DNR. Am I misinterpreting this?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the DNR may question whether they really need more fish or not. But what we're trying to do with the bill is craft a compromise with the department. Rather than just open up a commercial fishing season for lake trout, which we could do under law because lake trout is a commercial harvestable species, we're just trying to go down the road to expand the assessment harvest for the handful of people on the North Shore that do it rather than open it up.
But, Mr. Chairman, will information still be gathered on this harvest as a part of that assessment process, or what does that mean?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, we will continue whether or not this bill proceeds or not. We will continue to need those fish for assessment, and we do get lengths and weights and lamprey wounds and a lot of the information from these fish in the two northern zones. We do our own netting down around Duluth. So we will use the information from any additional fish. Our latest models would indicate we don't need to take any more fish, but we will certainly pool those fish and use those in our analysis of the lake trout fishery.
So Mr. Chairman, Mr. Pryor, do you actually take sampling out of those catches to do that, or is this something that the fishermen provide data on their catch to you for use in the assessment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the commercial operators have worked very closely with us and provide the information.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Stump, and then I think the committee is
Mr. Chairman,
fully informed.
I didn't hear a good answer why the pygmy whitefish are in there, so I wonder if an amendment to take them out would be in order. Lines 24 and also 29, page 1.
The DNR haven't answered that question about the pygmy whitefish versus the lake whitefish.
Mr. Chair, members, we'll check, and if we need to put it back in there, we'll work with the committee to do that.
Mr. Chair, I move on lines 1.29 and 1.4 to delete the...
Reinstate
the statement. Let me see. Delete subdivision 2 and.
Senator Stump moves reinstate on page 1, line 9, and line 14 to reinstate the stricken language.
Huh? Oh, Mr. Chairman, we're working off the delete all amendment.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm on the wrong one.
You need to delete section 2.
I believe it's reinsert the stricken language on line 1.24 and
1.29. Correct.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Knopf.
I think that's the only change in Section 2, so you might as well, I think Senator Stumpf was alluding to that earlier, you might as well just delete Section 2 from the bill and then reinstate the stricken language on 1.29.
All right. Does everyone understand the amendment? Mm-hmm. See no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 1131 as amended. Be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus policy bill.
Thank you, Senator Stump. Quick question, Senator Bach, on the Section 6, the rule amendments.
Mr. Chairman, I think that would require this bill to go to local government.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
So I think are those an important part of the bill?
Probably where it should go.
Is that section essential? Senator Bach, is that section essential?
Members, it gives us the ability to update the rules related to the changes in the amendments, so yes, it is. Okay. Otherwise, it'll take us probably 2 years to go through the rulemaking process.
All right. So, Senator Stump, do you want to amend your motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that Senate File 1131 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Local Government.
Is there anyone here who would like to speak in opposition to the bill from the public? Okay, seeing none. Further discussion on Senate File 1131. On the motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Senator Saxhog, are your witnesses? Are your witnesses from out of town?
I think, Mr. Chair, I think that three out of four of them are.
Okay, why don't we do that? Why don't we bring them up? Why don't we do your bill next?
Is this one on the other Senator Bach bill? Mr. Chairman, is the other Senator Bach bill not?
We'll do that. He doesn't have out-of-town witnesses for that bill, so we'll get to him, but a little later. Senate File 919.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today, I have Senate File 919, affectionately called by some the Saxhog Game and Fish Bill. I have an author's amendment I'd like to move. The A3 amendment, Mr. Chair.
And there's one more. Pass that out. It's coming. This will be done. It's being passed out. So that's all. Scogan will move the A3, delete everything.
Mr. Senator Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saxhog, somebody from the DNR mentioned that you may want to include something else in this amendment. I don't know if you want to do it now. It has to do with the sporting license, because that's a dual-track license with the hunting end. And you could do that if you on line 1.18, if you delete and then on after fish house, on 1.18, insert and the angling portion of a sporting license.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Knack, delete the first and?
Excuse me, delete the first and then after fish house, insert comma and the angling portion of a sporting license.
Mr. Chair, I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
Well, he can just
okay, Senator Saxhog will move that as an amendment to the amendment.
He can just incorporate it.
Okay, all right. Senator Saxhog will just incorporate that. On the A3, any further discussion? It's an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted.
What's that, Tom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Briefly, Section 1 of this amendment changes the expiration date of Minnesota fishing licenses to April 30th. This would be done basically so that winter fishermen would not have to purchase two fishing licenses each spring. Section 2 of the bill allows for scopes on muzzleloaders. We've talked about this over the years. I see more and more support for this this particular section, and that's why it's part of this bill. And Section 3 places a one-year moratorium on licensing of new waters for aquaculture. And Ed Bogus from the DNR is with me to help answer some questions that you might have on that particular section.
I think everyone likes your bill, Senator.
I have some questions.
Senator Ingebretson.
I have some questions on that. Is he available for questions?
Sure is.
Excuse me, maybe Senator, you could explain it to me a little better, the both of you could, exactly why the moratorium.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebretson, this is language that the DNR had proposed in last year's Game and Fish bill, which ended up not, this particular portion anyway, did not pass. This, just to give a little more background, so I know it's new to you and some of the other members maybe could use a refresher, the raising of fish in wetlands has been an issue for the last, for many years internally within our Fish and Wildlife Division. We've had concerns about it. We're interested in maintaining stocking programs for walleye and other game fish. We're interested in maintaining a supply of bait fish for anglers. We're also interested in maintaining the value of wetlands for waterfowl and other wildlife, and in having a sustainable aquaculture industry. So we've, within our division, been looking at how wetlands, natural wetlands, are used for raising fish for many years. We had an internal committee back in the early 90s that looked at this issue. We brought together a group of stakeholders, aquaculture, waterfowl, fisheries biologists, wildlife biologists in the late 90s and early 2000s to look at this issue, and worked out a lot of issues, but there continues to be conflict over using natural wetlands to raise fish. And so beginning in the summer of 2005, we asked, and given all the I should also mention we've done research on this issue as well, and have found in many cases the presence of fish in a wetland is not good for the invertebrates that the ducks eat or that other aquatic life eats. But we've also done some research that shows if you have a wetland that's full of fathead minnows, which is a native species of minnow that can reproduce multiple times over during the course of a growing season. It's a species that's adapted to prairie wetlands, and so when there's water, they reproduce multiple generations over the course of a growing season. We did some research and found that putting walleye fry into a wetland that's full of fathead minnows actually could suppress that reproduction of those fathead fry over the course of the summer and actually improve the quality of the wetland. So it's not a simple fish are always bad or all species of fish are always bad relationship. It's also not just related to aquaculture, because there's other fish that are causing huge problems in our wetlands that aren't part of aquaculture, like carp and bullheads and some of those species. So we asked a group starting late in 2005 to try to synthesize all the science on fish and wetlands, try to look back at all the process that we had done with fish and wetlands, and come up with some recommendations on criteria when we should allow fish, what type of fish we should allow, how we license wetlands, how we charge for licensing of wetlands, and so forth. And that group did complete a report this last November. We did an update on it at our roundtables in January. We're taking that information and still trying to work through some language ourselves that would be a little bit different approach than what we had suggested last year and that what Senator Saxhawk has in this bill. But we're still wrestling with that a little bit internally. We met with some of the groups right before Christmas. We're looking at some language to discuss with our commissioner next week. So we're hopeful to still bring something forward this session in terms of some language on this issue, but we aren't prepared to do so today. The idea behind this last year was to stop licensing any new wetlands or using any new wetlands ourselves that weren't already being used for this purpose while we sorted through this complex issue. So this actually is the date. If our bill last year would have passed, this is the date through which it would have been effective. So we still think this is a good concept. But we've done a lot more work on the issue since last year, but we're still not quite where we'd like to be to try to our goal, keeping in mind those things I said at the start of maintaining our stocking programs and a bait industry and protecting wetlands and providing for sustainable aquaculture, our goal is to start moving this industry in a direction that's less dependent on natural wetlands, or that when there is no alternative to using natural wetlands would provide some way of mitigating for those impacts on those natural wetlands. So that's Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, that's a little bit of background as to why we were proposing this a year ago and where we're at today.
I think I understand. Thank you. Would you also tell me what groups you talk about and how many groups there are and what those groups consist of? Well, those are bait dealers, obviously. And
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, the groups we met with right before the holidays were primarily the aquaculture licensees themselves. Minnesota Waterfowl Association was present. Ducks Unlimited was invited but was unable to attend that day. The group that put together the report was agency and university scientists. It wasn't any of the private sector groups at all. The group that I talked about back in the late 90s and early 2000s that we called together was 40-some individuals that was all of the aquaculture, waterfowl, fisheries, and wildlife types of groups. I could get you that list, but I don't have it here today.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair? Oh, excuse me.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Saxhawk, is Section 2 kind of the nose under the tent? Are you going to be coming in next year to allow archers to have use scopes on their bows?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Saxhawk.
Well, I haven't heard any hue or cry, Senator Stump, for scopes on bows. So I'm not thinking about that. I think you've been on this committee long enough, Senator Stump, so you've seen this whole thing progress from many, many years ago when Senator Bob Lessard would have thought it sheer heresy to even think about having a scope on a muzzleloader, to the point today where I'm getting many, many more calls in favor of this than not.
Further discussion on Senate File 919. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Saxhawk, I just wanted to ask what happened to the ATV sticker idea. It's not ready for... You took it out, I see.
Well, I think that there's more discussion to be had, and it's going to be dealt with later on in this committee, in your committee, so that I thought it'd be best just to take it off of the bill.
So, Mr. Chair, you have another bill with that discussion in it?
I think there are other bills. Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I think there's another bill coming along that could deal with it. But
okay. We'll be hearing one of those tomorrow as well, Senator Anderson. Further discussion on Senate 919.
Mr. Chair, I think
we've got some folks who want to testify.
Yes, I think particularly on Section 3.
Okay. Dick Sternberg? Welcome to the committee.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dick Sternberg. I formerly worked for the DNR back in the 80s, or 70s and 80s, retired in 81 as a senior fisheries biologist. I've been very interested in the aquaculture industry for a long time. I was very much involved with the accelerated walleye program back about 10 years ago, trying to get that off the ground, and so I have some concerns about this bill. And probably even more concerns about Senate File 1517, which is also what I would consider sort of an anti-aquaculture bill. Now, I don't know how much we should get into this discussion today based on Mr. Bogus's remarks about the fact that we're going to be working on this new language. I guess my question for Mr. Bogus would be, when is this new language going to be available, and are we going to have the aquaculture industry, going to have some input into what that new language is? And so is this moratorium, which goes for basically another year, does he mean that the language will be available after the end of the moratorium, or are we going to have to talk about this in time to do something about this moratorium this year? Is that a clear question?
you can pose a rhetorical question, Mr. Sternberg, but we're interested in hearing your opinions.
Well, okay. My opinion is I believe that this bill in its present form, anyway, is anti-fishing. I believe it's anti-aquaculture. The problem being that if we put a moratorium on it, and as Mr. Bogus said, we have a lot of problems with other things happening, like other fish moving around, getting into wetlands. We have problems with shoreland property owners deciding they're going to stock their own lake, thereby making wetlands inhospitable for aquaculture. So is there going to be a net loss, in other words, of pond area for aquaculture? And at a time when we really are needing more pond area for aquaculture, in fact, one of my interests in all this is the fact that I believe we need to be expanding our statewide walleye stocking quota. And that's based on some new information from the DNR, some heavier stocking rates that have done the trick in terms of producing the best walleye fisheries. And if we're going to get up to the numbers that they're talking about, we're going to need considerably more walleyes than we've got right now. And so that's really, I think, what I probably my main concern. My other concern is that a lot of these decisions that are being made on a lot of press information, misinformation, you might say. I've got an article right here. We just talked about this whole business of how walleyes can actually be beneficial. I've got an article right here that says waterfowl versus walleyes. This was an article that came out in Outdoor News here a couple years ago, and I think this really started the whole ball rolling on this issue. It got a lot of hunters, duck hunters, concerned about the fact that, hey, these walleyes are ruining our duck hunting. And it turns out that what's said in this article is really not true. The walleyes are not the culprit. But has there ever been a retraction anywhere? Nobody's ever seen a retraction on any of that stuff. So the new information that's coming out is basically unknown by the hunting public. And so it's still like the aquaculture is a villain in all of this. And so that's my main reason for being opposed to this bill. And I also note that there's aquaculture activities in these prairie wetlands. Less than 5% of the prairie wetlands are affected by aquaculture, are used for aquaculture. So how in the world can we possibly relate any change in duck patterns or duck populations to aquaculture? I have a cabin up in central Minnesota, up in the Leech Lake area. One of the reasons I bought the cabin up there is I was hoping that I would be able to find some good duck hunting, because Leech Lake and the surrounding area has been known for decades as being a premier duck hunting area. Very little aquaculture going on up in that area. I haven't put a decoy out since I've been up there because there are no ducks. So we have a general duck decline in the state that has nothing to do with aquaculture. So I think that we talked about this committee that was formed to try to work some of these things out. I was involved with that. The net result of that committee was that we put together a fact sheet that really spelled out some of these issues and gave the aquaculture side of the equation, you might say. That fact sheet never saw the light of day. The commissioner decided to bag it at the time of the duck rally because it was too controversial, so nobody's got to see that. There's a lot of things in there that if, I don't want to go through the whole list with you here today because I realize the time is short. But so I don't believe that aquaculture has gotten a fair shake on this whole thing. There's a lot of new research now going on the part of the DNR. I just spoke to the top DNR duck researcher the other day. They're looking at a lot of landscape issues now, this whole business of interconnectedness of waters, where these fish are kind of moving cross-country because of all the ditching and tiling and things like that. That has nothing to do with aquaculture. That's going to happen one way or the other. And they're starting to realize now, I believe, that the flooding patterns is another thing. So the rough fish, the carp, the bullheads are really more of a villain than are these aquaculture operations. So with that, I think I know the time is short here today. I guess one other note I'd like to make is that I'm sure you've all read in the newspapers of how we're losing our fishermen. You know, we've got about a 10% decline in license sales over the last 5 or 6 years. And now with some of these bills that are in the legislature right now, maybe not so much this one as the other one I referred to, it's going to be harder to get bait. Bait's going to be more expensive. We're going to have less walleyes to stock, so fishing's going to be tougher. And we're spending money in some other bills that are going through the legislature right now on the fishing endowment funds. We're trying to spend money to improve or make more interest in fishing, and at the same time we have bills here that are going to make fishing worse. So I think in the interest of improving fishing in Minnesota, we ought to just kill this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Rob Jost?
Kill the section of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask one question?
I'm sorry.
Senator Mr. Chairman, Mr. Sternberg, I wasn't listening closely when you started your testimony. Are you here representing yourself or another organization?
Well, I'm doing both. As I said, I've been involved with this accelerated walleye program since I guess it started in 1997, and I agreed now to represent the bait growers in terms of trying to kill some of this legislation that's in the hopper right now, because I believe it's anti-fishing and it's anti-walleye stocking.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Turnberg, are you a lobbyist for them?
No.
Thank you.
No.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. I'm not sure if this should be directed to you, Senator, or Mr. Bogus again, but with regards to private lakes, I think the testimony of the DNR here was earlier that we're moving, if you'd like to move towards more private lakes. So, in other words, if a group, it could be two or three people own an area, they could actually allow or contract with the folks, the aquaculture folks, they could do that. Is that what you're encouraging? Or I'm somewhat concerned as well as the man testifying here that our walleyes are getting to be an issue and stocking is getting to be an issue, and I just need to understand a little better.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, our thought is to try to do some things through fees or incentives to have the and we don't have anything finalized at this point, but the direction that we're thinking we need to go is more towards use of constructed ponds or ponds that are restored specifically for aquaculture purposes rather than using the public wetlands that exist out there today. We think there's ways to do that with incentives in terms of what we pay for fish. We buy about 40% of our walleyes from the private sector now, or through licensing. Right now, there's one fee for an aquaculture license, whether I license one wetland or 100 wetlands. And we think that if we can tie the fees a little more closely to the value of the public wetland that's being used, that that will encourage people to limit the amount that they need to only what they need and to maybe become more efficient or to look at other ways of producing the fish. So it's to try to move the industry in a little different direction. It's less dependent on public wetlands. So if there was a private pond, and a lot of the water even that's surrounded by private land is still public water, so but if there was a private pond, then that's we'd like to give that some sort of a price break on licensing or something like that to encourage people to use those types of waters rather than public waters.
Just a follow-up.
Ingebrigtsen, we got to make sure these folks from out of town get
just
heard.
Just one quick follow-up. Then I'll ask that question of you being here, the question he had then of the timeline. When do you see that timeline?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm not positive if DNR is going to have some language for this session. It was our intent. We had a placeholder in through the governor's process. We're meeting next week with our commissioner, so we're hopeful that we could have something yet this session, but we know things are moving pretty quickly now, and so it may not be for this session.
Thank you.
Mr. Jost.
Yeah, I'm Rob Jost, and I'm co-president of the Minnesota Fish and Bait Farmers Association, and I guess came down here to speak on this pond moratorium language, but Mr. Sternberg, I pretty much said everything that I was going to say on that. I just want to go on record saying that if the DNR is coming up with some new language on this issue, I wish as an industry they would take our input on this issue, because I feel we've got probably some ideas that could help out in that decision making, and I guess I don't have anything else unless somebody has some questions.
Okay. Mr. Chairman,
I'm sorry, Mr. Sturmer. We got to get to some of these other folks. Mike Holm and John Chalmers.
Okay.
My name is Mike Holm. I'm the other co-president of the Minnesota Fish and Bait Farmers, also in West Central Bait and Fisheries out of New London, Minnesota. Been doing it since 1980, owned it since 1991. I'm just here to oppose the moratorium, and as far as the man-made ponds, I just don't think it's affordable at the price of land right now, going for $3,000 to $6,000 an acre, and by the time you'd make ponds and for what you'd get out of that, I don't think you could make your interest payments on that.
Hi, my name is John Chalmers. I'm from Osage, Minnesota. I also am a member of this association. I'm just down here today, too, to testify that I am as well as against the language in this bill and would like to see it rewritten or new language.
Does the association have a problem with your aquaculture being part of, just to make sure that it's part of a management plan within a wetland? Why is that problematic?
What is the management plan going to be? I mean, from what date are you going to say it? You know, we've heard where you have to bring it back to what it was. What was it? You know, my company's been in business since 1952. So, I mean, where are you going back to? Before the glacier, after the glacier?
Well, whatever plan it is, do you have a problem with?
I think it could. I think it could put us out of business, is what I think.
As a lot of these people think that we're solely responsible for the degradation of these wetlands, but there's a lot of other factors: drainage and tiling into these wetlands, the Canadian goose, what kind of effect is that having? There's many issues, and to expect us as an industry to solve all those issues is a little scary.
I guess I'm trying to figure out who has said that. Can you tell me who has said that?
On the management plan?
It's
in the bill.
I keep hearing that This is anti-walleye. This is anti-fishing. This is putting all the problems of the wetland on aquaculture. And if someone is saying that, I'd like to know who is, because I haven't heard that myself, and I've been involved with this issue. Can you tell me who's told you that you are the cause of the degradation of the wetlands?
Last year there was some legislation in the House, and I think it was authored by Representative Wagenius, and that's exactly what she was saying, okay. Mr. Chairman.
Well, I was co-author of her, I was her author of her companion bill in the Senate, and I've never said that, nor do I believe it. Who had a question? Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I've just been listening here, and I'm just, from what I can understand, the DNR is coming up with some language that's going to deal with this issue sometime, maybe this session, maybe later. And there is some clearly some opposition to the moratorium. Is there, Mr. Chairman, is there a rush to have this moratorium in place right now, or is it something that could be delayed a year? Or?
Take a look at the language, Senator Dill. It says there's a moratorium unless the rearing is part of a wetland improvement plan approved by the commissioner. Now, these folks question what kind of plan that might be, but it's not a wholesale moratorium. They would just like to proceed with some sort of kind of overall picture of what that wetland is, how we're treating that wetland as a whole. You know, if you recall, we're kind of doing that with invasive species as well.
Is this part of another?
We're not saying you can't treat a lake with some sort of chemical, but we just wanted to make sure that it's part of a wholesale plan. We're just kind of the same ideas, principles is being applied here. I think that's what Senator Saxon was saying.
Mr. Chairman, to that point, is there some place where wetland improvement plan is currently defined or described in terms of its elements in current law? No. Or is this just a new term?
Mr. Knopf.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, no, it's not defined in current law. Not this plan isn't defined in current law, this wetland improvement plan they're talking about.
Well, so, Mr. Chairman, it isn't surprising that people would be puzzled as to what that expectation was. How could people that were involved with the fish rearing, you know, currently or planning to meet gain the approval of the commissioner if they don't even know what the criteria or what needs to be addressed in a wetland improvement plan is?
Fair point. Maybe that's something we can work on.
Mr. Chairman, I think this maybe it ought to be held for some more work before, you know, I think there may be some resolution here, and I would hope that could be achieved.
Okay. Mr. Bogus, you'll be able to have a chat with Mr. Jost at some point. He's saying yes. Further discussion on Senate File 919. Just so folks know, Section 1, kind of common sense change, but it's a culture change, too. You're going to have to buy your license at a different time, just so people know that. I think it's a good change, but folks should know that that's what we're doing. Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Just one quick question, then, with regards to what Senator Olson was talking about.
Uh-huh.
What can we tell these folks here that are in the business of rearing walleyes and bait as to how they're going to resolve this when they leave the room today?
Well, we ended with the DNR committing to meet with or at least have a chat with the Minnesota Fish and Bait Farmers Association about what kind of wetland improvement plan would what that would entail.
So, Mr. Chairman?
And they're going to – my hope is that they work to something that's mutually agreeable.
No, I do, too.
So, Mr.
Thanks.
Chairman, could Senator Saxog move Section 1 and 2 for inclusion in the omnibus and hold back on Section 3 until you have some language? I mean, we've got more time for policy, And I would rather than just moving it, see if we can get some resolution before we, in fact, act affirmatively on it for inclusion in the omnibus.
Is Senator Olson, I've been just laying these over anyway, so we haven't really voted.
So you're just laying them over.
Yeah.
You're not talking about moving their inclusion.
Correct. Correct. It's laying over for possible inclusion. And if there's no further discussion, we'll do that with Senate File 919. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you.
Is Jungbauer here?
Yes, he is.
Sir Jungbauer. Senate File 331.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have good news and I have bad news. Just to make your meeting go a little quicker, Senate File 331, I'm going to actually request that gets returned to the author, and we're just going to work off of 332 to try to make a few changes.
Okay. Senate File 332.
Right. I do have an author's amendment, the A7 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the amendment.
A7 is being passed out. This is your first hearing. This is an author's amendment, so we'll just act on it while it's being passed out to put it in the shape the author desires. All those in favor of the A07-0174 is say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Amendment's adopted.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, you put in a lot of hard work here today, so hopefully we can flush out some of the problems with wastewater treatment plants today.
Whoa. Mr. Chairman, one more bad pun like that, and I think I'll reconsider.
Oh, that was the wrong way to put it. I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, members, everybody here knows, I think, except for maybe some of the new members, which, oh, I see we still have one here. I have a passion for trying to protect our waters. I have a passion for wastewater and on-site systems. The chemistry, the biology, the science, that's my passion. What we're trying to do with Senate File 332, the last couple of years we worked with, in a bipartisan way, to try to look at some ways to improve some of the wastewater treatment plants, the actual city plants, community plants, around the state of Minnesota. What Senate File 332 does is actually changes the language to allow the communities to get a little bit more in their grant and loan money if they look at a zero discharge facility. And one of the first things we did in that amendment was to change it. It was kind of misleading in talking about putting treated effluent back to the aquifer. In dealing with the American Groundwater Association last year, I got to be one of their speakers, and it was interesting to note that they were talking in the state of Minnesota that by the year 2036, if we don't start getting more water back into our aquifers, that half of the wells in the state of Minnesota, by their prediction, would go dry. And part of what we do in cities is we typically plop wells around the city, we take up that water, and then we send it down a nice pipeline down into the city treatment plant, and when it's all done, it goes back into our lakes, streams, and rivers. Now, not every treatment plant has the ability to find an area to land base that, but that's what we're looking for, is to try to get more communities, as they upgrade their wastewater treatment plants or put in new treatment plants, is to be sure that that final treated effluent goes through trench systems, rapid infiltration basins, some way finds its way back into a way to replenish the aquifers. So it's simply a bill that allows and looks for more incentive for cities to do that. I guess we'll keep it simple since the hour's late, and you can ask questions about that. It probably has some more stops. We have people from PFA here, Pollution Control Agency, Met Council. We've been trying to work to be sure that in our quest to get some of these systems to return the water to the aquifers, that we're not inadvertently taking funds away from other systems that just don't have the land available to move away from a direct discharge into a surface water.
So what does your bill do?
Great question.
It actually, in common sense terms, if you look on page 2, line 25, What we were trying to do originally was to try to get people grants up to 100%. That doesn't work within federal and state guidelines, is what the people at PFA tell me. So they told me the best way to try to work that was cap it at 75% for eligible grant money. And there are some changes going on at the federal level that this would work right in place with that. And members, we have assurances, as Congressman Overstar was here, I believe, 2 weeks ago now. We just had a three-day wastewater conference last week, so my head's kind of spinning on all that sort of stuff. But Congressman Overstar promised to bring a lot of new monies home to Minnesota and other states that have wastewater plant, treatment plant problems, so that we could gear up to be fixing, replacing, and doing that. And Senator Langseth also has understood, and a lot of our legislature has understood, that we need to put a new influx of money into upgrading treatment plants, adding some new treatment plants for new businesses and things. And this is one way that allows a PFA to be able to distribute some more money.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Youngbauer, in response to Senator Chaudhry's question, you're really trying to get the discharge from municipal and other treatment plants to be handled through a ponding that allow the water to filter back into the aquifer versus into moving waters that will take it away. Is that really the goal of the bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, that is really the goal of the bill, and actually it's I'm pretty excited because the Pollution Control Agency is working on some new standards under, and I always get which new chapters are. Chapter 7080 typically dealt with on-site systems in our backyards, in mini malls, places that weren't served by city treatment. As we move to more community-type systems of different sizes and things, it actually will be written into the new rules, and I think it's 7082 that actually kind of has a checklist that forces more communities to look back at these soil-based applications. I'm not really a fan of an open water, but we could put a trench system, dispersal system, drip irrigation systems, other types of systems under city parks or city lands. We could reuse water for irrigation. You could physically recycle water, and cities could take the initiative to locate, say, car washes, laundromats, greenhouses, someplace in close proximity to these city treatment plants. And we really want to encourage the reuse, the recycling, or the land base of the water so that we are not putting that effluent back into our lakes, streams, and rivers. And I do have Terry Kuhlman from PFA here. He could probably explain some things because, you know, I don't quite understand all the minutiae of this kind of language, so we're just trying to get this priority system set up a little bit higher.
This is primarily a finance bill, right?
Primarily, but it has to be changed in policy, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Terry Kuhlman, Executive Director of the Minnesota Public Facilities Authority. And real quickly, what this bill does is modify the WIF program, or Wastewater Infrastructure Funding Program, provide a little additional incentive. The first one, we come to matching grants with USDA. It increases the match from 50-50, the grant amount, to 75-25. The state comes up with 75% grant. That's an incentive to rural development to really look at these type of systems, more of the community mound or rapid filtration as an option. We've long felt that those tend to be a little lower cost alternatives and should be looked at anyway. This also provides the benefit of keeping the groundwater in the ground, keep it from discharging the surface. And on the regular WIF program, when it's in conjunction with the Public Facilities Authority revolving fund, where the WIF is a 20-year loan, in some cases at year 21 when loan repayments are in place, if it's a real high cost based on certain conditions, we provide 50% loan, 50% grant of that amount. And what this does is include in that 50-50 formula the zero discharge based facilities. So again, it's an incentive, it's not a mandate that cities look at this, but it just provides a little additional incentive to look at that as an option when they proceed. So it's trying to encourage this practice is what this bill is trying to do.
All right, Senator Dill, and then I'd like to move this bill on.
Mr. Chairman, just so I understand what Mr. Kuhlman said, you said the cost of the system that Mr. Youngbauer is promoting, Senator Youngbauer is promoting, is actually a little less expensive than common systems that are used. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, a lot of these systems are being built today, and one of the things the Pollution Control Agency did in the facility planning process was start in the on-sewered areas, encourage cities to look at septics first, fixing them so they'd work properly, then more into the community mounds. So they got to go through that progressional stage before they actually get into municipal systems that do surface discharge and treatment. So that, in a lot of cases, it can be cheaper. In some cases, it can be more expensive, depending on circumstances or situations. So it depends on size and volume, land, types of soils.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, since it's going to come to the Finance Committee, what I don't understand is whether this calls for a net increase in funding or if it's just taking the existing funding and providing the incentives within that pot of money.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, there will be a slight increase because we're looking at the match to USDA rural development on the projects that do 0% discharge. They get it roughly about $6 million a year in grant federal funds, split between drinking water and wastewater. So you're not talking huge amount of money, but you know there, it's depending on one's perspective. A million is a lot of money, but it could run $1.5 million additional a year.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Fredrickson.
Chairman, I would move that Senate File Number 332 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance.
I'm sorry, did you make a motion?
Mm-hmm. Chairman, yes. I move that Senate File 332 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to Finance.
Further discussion? On the motion? Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Johnson, you had some testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'll keep this very brief because I know we're over time. My name is Craig Johnson. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. We do not have any problem working from the author's amendment with the change made to line 17 of page 2 that adds zero discharge facilities to those that are eligible for special consideration for the 50% grant, 50% loan program. My concerns are with the remaining language in Section C of the bill, page 2, lines 23 through 34. If the intent of this is to encourage lower-cost systems to go in, what this section actually does is doubles the amount of money that those lower-cost systems would be eligible for. The current limit is $4 million and $15,000 per hookup. This changes their eligibility to $8 million and $30,000 per hookup. The effect of that could be much more expensive systems qualifying for this program, and it could also mean that the money that currently doesn't go far enough to help these small communities, keep in mind this only affects the WIF program. This grant program only helps our smallest, lowest income communities, could now end up going to only half as many communities as it previously did. If they build more expensive systems under these guidelines. Obviously, they could still be cheaper systems, but the threshold is provided for them to be up to twice as expensive as a more traditional system is currently built for. That would be my concern, is the language in that section alone of what remains in this bill. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Happy to answer questions.
Yeah, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, would that not be an issue they could deal with in finance?
A threshold question, a policy, or a finance question?
Mr. Chair, in my non-senatorial opinion, I think it can be dealt with in either place. It does not change the amount of money being spent by the program. It's a policy change to the amount that each project can get in the program. So it actually doesn't increase the amount of money the state has to spend for this program. It just says each project can take up to twice as much as it previously could. And so I think you can do it in either place, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Johnson, is this good policy?
The League of Minnesota Cities, Mr. Chair, does not support the language in Section C.
Senator Youngbauer?
Mr. Chair and members, we would be happy to work with Mr. Johnson and any others concerned to fine-tune this. We want to make sure it's beneficial without any adverse consequences to anyone.
So we send this on. You all will work on it.
Yes, we will, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator. Members, I apologize. We're going to have to take the rest of the agenda at the next hearing. Meeting is adjourned.
We're just getting on a roll.
We didn't.